I recently hosted my program, Both Sides Now, on Medscape, covering physician-assisted dying. And I talked with four experts on this topic, and I thought their interviews were so fascinating, so compelling, that I wanted to give you a chance to hear them individually. Dr. Farr Curlin is both a physician and a theologian. He thinks that spiritually, it's not right to engage in physician-assisted dying. He thinks that it compromises the dignity of the individual to help them die, to rush their death, to hasten it in any way. I want to welcome now Farr Curlin, who is a physician, an expert in palliative care at Duke University. He's the Trent Professor of Medical Humanities there and also works in the Center for Bioethics, Humanities, and the History of Medicine at Duke. He's certainly one of the nation's leading experts on end-of-life care, and he's done pioneering work in integrating theology and healthcare. Welcome, Farr.
Thank you.
So let me begin by asking you sort of a straightforward question. You've got a lot of experience in palliative care. What do you think is the key reason to oppose physician-assisted dying or physician-assisted suicide, if we were to broaden it out a bit more? But as you think about it, what's the key reason to oppose that practice?
The main reason physicians should oppose physician-assisted suicide is that assisted suicide directly contradicts the purpose of medicine. It directly contradicts physicians' longstanding profession to maintain solidarity with those who are sick and debilitated. It's not just bad medicine. I think it's the antithesis of medicine.
How do you respond to those who say, well, part of my mission is to relieve suffering, part of my mission as a physician is to listen to my patients. Let's presume they're terminally ill. If they want assistance in dying, that is consistent with my ethical obligation both to relieve suffering and to honor their wishes.
So relieving suffering is obviously an essential aspect of physicians' work. But if we have no other objective criterion to decide what suffering we are obligated to relieve and what suffering we are not, then there is literally no boundary on our use of medical technology to achieve things that people want. Conditions that people suffer, they can ask that we take them away.
So far, it does get asked, and we have doctors sort of contacting us with this kind of question, and they say, okay, certainly we don't want to be involved with children or psychiatric patients, but at the far end of dying, there are people in the final throes of death. Their MS is overcoming them. Their Parkinsonism is overcoming them. They're in a stage of dying that is imminent, not maybe even 6 months, but we're talking days. Is there no relief, no mercy to be offered by hastening their death even at that point?
Are patients in that situation, and I've taken care of scores in that situation, we can, without ever making their death our goal, we can treat those symptoms with powerful medications as much as they need to get the symptoms relieved, whether it's choking on their secretions, whether it's gasping for breath, whether it's being in pain. And if as a side effect, the medication hastens their death, of course physicians can still do that. And they've done that for centuries under what has been called the rule of double effect, but has been an important heuristic for guiding us. We don't make the death a part of our plan. We make relief of those health-diminishing, health-crushing symptoms our goal. And we work toward it as hard as we need to get it done.
So just to be clear, you're willing to take the risk of bringing about death, but you're not willing to aim straight at bringing on death with these kinds of patients.
Absolutely. In fact, if you think about it, these are cases that make the point more clearly, but all of medicine requires taking on the risk of doing harm. It does not require intentionally doing harm.
So let me go right to a tough personal question, but have any of your patients approached you or made a request about assistance in dying, terminally ill patients?
I've practiced medicine in Illinois and in North Carolina. In neither state is assisted suicide legal. I've never been asked by a patient to write a prescription for a lethal dose of medication to be used in their life. I have been asked by several patients whether I would promise them that if they came to a point in which they did not want to continue living, I would make sure they didn't wake up. And so those were, as the conversations unfolded, their form of asking for me to hasten their death.
And when they say don't wake up, do they mean sufficient doses of pain medication to, as they sometimes say, snow them or keep them non-responsive?
Yes, that was what has generally been described once I ask further questions. Just to put me out of my misery is often language patients use, to make it be over, to make sure that I don't go on in that condition.
So in your experience then, you can achieve a kind of, let's call it pain-free, non-suffering existence without bringing about death.
I don't ever promise that we can entirely get rid of pain and certainly cannot get rid of suffering. To be human is to suffer, and we can never take away all of the suffering. What we do have, though, like we've never had in all of history, powerful and effective means of alleviating distressing symptoms. And in my experience, proportionate palliation can be used to effectively deal with distressing symptoms in virtually every case.
Some patients are simply going to say, and I'm sure you've heard this, I don't want to go through all that. I know you could help me medically. Maybe you can even help me spiritually or emotionally or put me in touch with people who can do that aspect, but it's not the way I want to go. What do you say to those who say, look, let's let people control the manner of their dying? In this country, they need prescriptions. That's what doctors can write. So if I wave off a kind of palliated death, if you will, even a good one, what would your response be?
My response would be, to begin with a question, why is the physician being asked to do this? You mentioned that physicians have the authority to write prescriptions, but the truth is, as I certainly know, and I think is pretty obvious, there are many ways that patients can take their lives that are more efficient and more effective than ingesting an overdose of medications. And physicians already have the authority to refuse all life-sustaining treatment, to refuse the involvement of physicians altogether. But physicians, their commitment to the patient is not to satisfy their requests. It's not to just alleviate their suffering without any conditions on what kind of suffering they're going to relieve. It's to attend to the patient's health, to preserve and restore the patient's health in the ways that are reasonable and can be done given the kind of situation the patient's in. Doesn't mean we do everything. But it certainly does not mean that we pivot to getting rid of the patient in order to get rid of their suffering.
What would you say to those who point toward Oregon and Washington, states that have had legalization of at least assisted dying for some time, not assisted suicide, which I'm going to ask you about in a minute? They say, look, you worry that physicians are going to be seen as violating their ethical principles, their codes that make them a profession. People worry about abuse, but we don't see it. So why not extend the model, as California decided to do, maybe other states may decide to do, the abuses, the slippery slope, we don't see that. So proponents say.
Art, when a physician is intentionally hastening a patient's death or cooperating with the patient so the patient can take her own life, that physician has already slid down a terribly long slope. That physician is already detached from centuries of professional railings and boundaries that physicians have maintained so that patients can entrust themselves to physicians when they cannot care for themselves. The physician has already given up the commitment to be committed to the patient's health, to the good of those who are sick. He's already given up a historic commitment to not give a patient a deadly remedy to cause their death, even when the patient implores it. The physician's already decided, seems like to me implicitly, that their obligation is primarily to satisfy the patient wishes, not to seek the good of the patient with respect to health. So that's a long slope that the physician's already traveled down to get to that point. And the truth is, you mentioned that we're not seeing slippery slope, but it depends on how you define it. In every jurisdiction where assisted suicide has been made legal, there has been a steady increase in the number of people availing themselves. It hasn't been explosive in Oregon.
So I did want to ask you about the slippery slope issue. I think that's a major policy issue, and I just want to sort of bore in on it a little bit. Here in the U.S., I think what we've dealt with is physician-assisted dying, meaning we're going to restrict this, so they say in Oregon, so proponents said in the California arguments, Vermont, Washington State, we're going to restrict this to the dying. They're going to die anyway. We're not going to bring about death. People are going to die. We look over at the Netherlands. We look over at Belgium. We see physician-assisted suicide. They're not dying. They're suffering in some way or another. Horrible suffering is the claim. Do you think that if we go on the path we're on here with states, some states allowing physician-assisted dying, it's inevitable that we must wind up with physician-assisted suicide and all of the more controversial baggage that that carries?
Well, Art, I don't agree with the distinction you draw between suicide, assisted suicide, and assisted dying as it pertains to, say, Oregon. Suicide's traditionally been understood as an act taken by an individual with the express purpose of ending their life. I grant that when a person has a prognosis that's quite short, that it seems more understandable to people, more acceptable than if they, say, are losing some of their eyesight, but are 30 years old and live another 50 years. But in both cases, you might have a more defensible suicide and a less defensible suicide. They're both suicide. They're both cases where the person's acting so as to cause their death. That's their intention. Mm-hmm. If they fail, they fail to die, they will have failed in doing what they set out to do. So we have assisted suicide in Oregon. We have assisted suicide now in California and in Washington, in Vermont. And what we have in Europe is euthanasia as well.
Let me push in a slightly different direction as we get to the end of our conversation here. I'm interested in knowing, is your opposition or some of the concerns you have, would it be different if we said we're just going to have assisted dying and it will be done by pharmacists or it will be done by executioners or some bioethicists? I don't know. Someone will make the medicine available, but it won't be doctors because they have a separate pledge and a code that says do not kill, do not harm. Is part of the concern who's doing it more than whether people are allowed to do it?
Absolutely, that's part of the concern. That's an enormous part of the concern. If the society is going to legalize suicide, let it be almost anyone but physicians doing it. Look, I've practiced for several years. I practiced palliative medicine and hospice in the context of hospice primarily on the south side of Chicago in Durham, North Carolina. And I have innumerable times faced patients who they or their family members look at me with a question, which they put more or less articulately of the form. Are you just going to try to get rid of me? Why are you using that medication? Why are you in such a hurry? Why is mom not waking up anymore? And a little conversation brings out that they've watched Aunt Susie, who battled cancer for years, then went into hospice and was dead 3 days later after the morphine was started. And their concern is that we have detached ourselves from this historic boundary, historic commitment, that we are not going to intentionally hasten the death of our patients. If they believe I respect that commitment, they can trust me to treat their symptoms. If they don't, every time I give a little more medication and it makes them a little more sleepy, they worry I'm just trying to smooth them out, just get rid of them in a nice, unruffled way that doesn't cause too much hubbub. So the very possibility of people entrusting themselves to physicians depends on this commitment. And I think insofar as we let it go, we will find that we enter a time in which people's trust for physicians is radically diminished.
Let me just jump in. Brittany Maynard, the young woman who went from California to Oregon, publicized her desire to have assistance in dying, very photogenic, splashed all over the media, probably played a big role in legalization in California.
Absolutely. She's almost a kind of Hollywood picture of what Americans, I think many Americans long for and are fearful of losing their youth, their beauty, their freedoms, their independence, their capacities. And so when she took her death, or she took her life with the assistance of her physician, she had not suffered symptoms that were beyond palliation. Rather, as she said herself, she did not want to face losing those capacities. So the wealthy, the irony here is that physicians traditionally have been in solidarity with people who've long since lost their beauty, long since lost their strength, their independence. They have illnesses, injuries, debilities. They suffer. And if they can't look to physicians as people who are decidedly and decisively committed to walking alongside with them no matter what, and not trying to get rid of their suffering by getting rid of them, then I think we have privileged the desires of the few in a way that does great injustice to the desires of the many, and the many that physicians have a particular obligation to serve and to be in solidarity with.
Well, on that note of justice, let me thank you for this really compelling and riveting conversation. I think the audience will be clear about why Farr is got the standing he does in the palliative care community. And again, thank you very much for doing this.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
To see the complete show, Both Sides Now, covering physician-assisted dying, watch for it on Medscape, The Business of Medicine.